You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Tonight, you're graced with the presence of myself, Mark.
And I am Leon, although our compatriot Garth is not here because he is in Vegas. Breeze Vegas, that is. Not quite the same, but I'm sure just as fun.
Well, he's going to miss out on this amazing story that I've got, Leon, to lead off the show with today.
Tell us a story, Mark.
So I was going to say lucky enough, but I was unlucky enough.
Right.
To have a dental appointment on very early Monday morning, dragged myself out of bed before work, went off to the dentist, just for a checkup, mind you.
Of course.
And at some stage during this dental appointment, I've got the young dentist. I can say that because I'm older.
Yes. So they're all kind of young dentists
to
you.
Yeah. So the young dentist on one side of me, the young dental assistant on the other side of me, both of them young ladies, not that that matters, but just... So when I do the voices, people will understand.
Okie doke.
And, of course, once they've got their hands in my mouth and they're working away, they're just talking amongst themselves like I'm not there.
Uh-huh.
And so the young dental assistant says, "Oh, I went to Cheryl's the other night and...
Cheryl.
We played a board game.
Board game at Cheryl's?"
And the dentist said, "Board game?" You know, with almost like a sound of horror in her voice, like, "What the hell are you thinking?" She goes, "Yeah, I know. But anyway, we played a board game and I'd never heard of it before." Mm. "Have you heard of it? It's called Risk." And the dentist goes, "Oh, I'm not sure." She goes, "Yeah, well," and then I had the continent that was like right in the middle of the world.
Oh.
And then I got attacked by everyone constantly. It was no fun at all.
These are people with some sort of medical degree, assuming, yes? Okay, yeah. Cool. Keep going.
And then the dentist said, oh, that doesn't sound like fun. Oh, I played a board game a while back at a friend's place. Oh, I played a board... No, I won't do the voice again. I played a board game at a friend's place and it was really strange because... we were all on the same side, like cooperating.
That's crazy.
And that's what she said. She said, "What?"
Mm.
And the other dentist said, "Yeah." Mm. And I was just like, "Oh, my God, it's so lucky their hands are in my mouth," because I just wanted to, like, scream out and say, "No, this is all wonderful."
Did you muffled by saying, "Which version of pandemic were you playing?"
No, but I immediately thought, yep, pandemic.
And it'd have to be, surely.
So... it sounds like we've still got a bit of work to do to bring this hobby to the masses.
Yeah. Well, we're trying our hardest here, people, but there's only so much we can do.
Well, clearly, you know, we're making a big effort tonight because, of course, we're going to be talking about a couple of the games that we played recently at BorderCon.
Yes.
And then I'm going to talk about the news.
Indeed you do.
Which, of course, this time of year, it's all about all the hot game releases coming up. Some from Origins, some from Gen Con, some from Essen.
Yes.
We've got a whole bunch of those to talk about. So how about...
well, naturally, all those games that will be coming out, you can get from our good friends at Area 52, of course, which is the sponsor of the show, which we neglected to mention during your riveting story, Mark, that it is indeed the 5th of July. No?
That's it is.
Right. It is July. No, it's not July.
Yes, it is July.
Oh, God. It is the 5th of July, and this would be episode 189.
Two. So close. 219, Leon.
I miss a week, and I do a few dozen night shifts, and I lose myself completely. So anyway, yes, all that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh, but we will throw it to a song and be back with you.
Well, there you go. Well, that was a super quick song. What happened then?
I don't know. You've just exploded the studio. It was so professional. So professional. Anyway. Well,
that was the Quivers.
Yes.
With The Jackalope here on Edge Radio 99.3
which
FM.
Which appeared to be a 25-second song that we weren't prepared for. But there you go.
Now, Leon.
Yes.
You're going to tell us about a game that you played at BorderCon.
I am certainly going to.
Now, Garth and I didn't get to play this one, but you did try and pull it out again recently, and then
Yes.
The burger place ran out of table space.
Yes, that did indeed happen. We also ran out of time because after I played it, and spoiler alert, I may have purchased it. So that could probably tell you my feelings on this game. Now, before I mention this game, I have to do something that I've been bugged out for the last couple of weeks. As I've said, I work in a factory. I work in a chocolate factory. You all could probably figure out which one. It's a very popular one. But I've been told to give a shout out to all my co-workers because apparently for some reason they think it'd be fun to listen, even though they would have no idea whatsoever what we are talking about. So I would like to give a shout out to my good friends Shawnee G and his lovely girlfriend who is expecting a baby soon, and Shawnee F, who has just had a baby.
Shawnee F had a baby, did he?
Shawnee F did have a baby, and it was a whole story I'll tell you another time. And my good friends of many, many years, Ash and Parko, who they're the ones who kept saying, do us a shout-out. So this is me shouting out, hello, lads, you can stop listening now and go back to drinking and sport and all other normal factory worker stuff and ignore me and my weird hobbies. Anyway, that's out of the way. Now, Mark,
Garth,
would you...
Leon.
Oh God! It's all falling to pieces.
I've gone into auto because you know Garth. He's the game explainer amongst us. Yes. What are we going to do with him?
And I'm also sitting in his chair. I'm normally reclined in the corner, being the cool personality one. Now I've got to do some actual admin while we do this show. How would you like to be described, Mark, as Big Ears by your Bunny King? Would you like that?
I probably wouldn't mind any attention that I could get from my Bunny King.
Well, being considered Big Ears is one of the highest regards you can get once you succeed in making his Bunny Kingdom bigger and stronger.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what this game is Bunny Kingdom by Yellow Games, one of the most popular and colourful creators out there these days.
Yeah.
And he's created by a man, you may know him by the name of Richard Garfield.
Oh, he's done a little bit, Richard.
He has done a little bit. If you Google his name, it says he's an American mathematician, which that just goes to show where our hobby is in the world, that... Yeah, the guy that designed Magic the Gathering and Android Netrunner and King of Tokyo. Yeah, he's just a mathematician,
isn't
he?
He's done a bit, yeah.
Yes, I want it. So, Andrew Garfield, this is a game. He only does a game every year or two these days.
Andrew Garfield, he was Spider-Man.
Oh, my God! This is the worst show we've ever done. And I apologise to Area 52, which we've again neglected to mention when we came out of the song, that we'll give you a discount on this episode, we promise. That's a lie, we absolutely won't. And illustrated by Paul Maffion? I can't really pronounce that. But anyway, he's the same guy who did the art for Looney Quest, and he also did the art for one of the Seasons expansions, which you can definitely see as soon as you look at this game.
Yeah.
So what is Bunny Kingdom? Bunny Kingdom is quite a simple drafting and placement game.
Mm-hmm.
It's played over four rounds. You chuck this board down in front of you, and this board has a grid. It's numbered from 1 to 10 and then A to J, which is also 10, by the way. So it's 100 square
10 by 10 grid, yep.
And what you are going to be doing is drafting cards to place your little bunny figurines, which everybody has a whole plethora of, and more do they look good. So the components in this game and the art style, it looks well good.
Yep.
So the drafting of this game is quite simple. It's the same as every drafting game. You'll get a hand of cards, you'll pick the ones that you want, you'll pass them on to the next ones, and then everyone will reveal those cards, and you'll do certain things that are on those cards right then and there. Some you'll wait till the end of the turn.
So do you get to pick more than one card?
You get to pick two.
Ah.
So depending on the player count, I've played this with... I only played it with four, but you can play it with three as well. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, you have more cards, I believe.
Okay.
So when you play it, you can play the four-player game that I've played the few times I've played it. You get to pick two of the cards.
Nice.
So the main crux that you'll be doing in the game is the exploration cards. Now, what these are is they simply have a coordinate up in the top corner, and that'll show you where you're going to put a bunny.
Yeah.
And you're going to put them straight away. Now, this game is relatively family-friendly and almost younger kid-friendly in that once your bunny's on the board, end of story. There's no screwing around, somebody's taking your bunny off.
Okay.
Once you're on, you're on.
And these are like sort of largest, bright-coloured plastic bunnies, aren't they?
I wouldn't say large. They're quite small.
Yeah.
But, they're enough to definitely fit on the space.
So they're bigger than your average meeple, aren't they?
No, not really. No.
I thought I remembered them being about
They are not that big. This game would be twice as expensive as it was.
Oh, okay. Fair
enough. Either way, so on your exploration card, they will show you where you're placing it. But there also might be another symbol on there. And that symbol will either say... it'll either have a number or it'll have a picture. And on the picture, it could be one of the resources, because there's different resources in this game that you're trying to gather. There also could be a number, and that number will represent the level of castle that could be on that space. Because I'll explain at the end of the round how the scoring works, but the resources and the castles are very, very important. So they're the main cards you'll get. The other cards you can get, there are building cards. Now, these building cards are different things. That some of them are unique resources, things mm-hmm. like pearls, things like gold. Ooh. And to place them, you need to have kind of specific things. You need to own a certain bit of the water, or you need to own a bit of the mountain to be able to place these. And these cards, the buildings, you don't place then. You place them at the end of the round. So you just put that in front of you, you reveal it, and then you put the little building on it and go, at the end of the round, we can build this. And okay. you don't have to build it that round. You can build it in subsequent rounds. You can also build sky towers.
Ooh.
What these sky towers are is they can link one of your territories, which are called fiefs in this game. Anytime you have more than two bunnies connected, it's called a fief. Ooh. You can connect that with another fief somewhere else on the board. And you can do that to get mucho points at the end.
Okay.
You could also get more castles. So you can put a castle onto an area that you control, which helps. And then there's parchment cards. Parchment cards are the ones that you do not reveal. You save them to the end of the game.
Okay, in-game scoring.
Two different kinds. One of them is treasures, where you simply five victory points at the end.
Yep.
Six victory points at the end. Could not be simpler. The other ones, they have certain conditions on them by saying, if you own five carrot farms at the end, you get this many. If you own this many, this much water or this whatever else. One of them, which I think is really cool, is that if you're second at the end of the game, you get like 15 points.
Ooh.
Like, so basically, if you've got that card and you're pretty close, that could put you over the edge.
Bump you past first.
Yeah, so stuff like that. And there's also camps. Camps are the one kind of hitch to that rule that I said, once you put your bunny down, that's the end of the story. Because what you can do with a camp, once you've gone through the drafting phase, everyone's drafted all their cards, put your bunnies out, you've got to the building phase where you can choose to put your buildings out, but you don't have to if you don't want to. The camps, you can put your camp onto any space on the entire board and you put your bunny on it. And for the purposes of the scoring for the rest of the game, you do own that.
Okay.
However, if somebody pulls the card later, which has that same coordinate on it, they will kick you straight off.
Ooh.
So that's the only temporary one, because there is exactly one card per territory in this game. So that just pretty much makes sense. And then the scoring happens. And the way that the game scores is that you will score the different fiefs you have, so the different collections of bunnies in different areas.
Yeah.
It'll be how many different unique resources you have. Very important the word unique there, because if you've got like four bunnies, carrot farms in a row, that don't matter. That only counts as one.
Yes.
So you want various different things.
What are the other resources that the bunnies manage?
Well, they like fish.
Oh, do they?
They've got a fish as well. I don't know if there's just bunnies in this kingdom, although the art will imply that that's all there is. But they like fish. They like wood so they can build stuff.
Yes.
As well as the other unique ones I mentioned before.
Yeah.
And then you times that by the level of castles that they have, so the kingdoms that they've built for their king. So if you've got a level 2 castle and that's connected to a carrot farm and a wood farm, so that is 2 times 2, 4 points. You do that for all your fiefs, you score it on the victory track, you do that 3 times.
Yeah.
Or maybe 4 times. I can't remember. Don't matter. And then that's it. That's the end of the game.
So you score at the end of each round.
You score at the end of each round, and then at the end of the game, you do one final round of scoring, you flip over all those parchments, you do those scorings, and that's it. That's the whole game.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really, really simple. It actually says on the box itself, it says 14 plus. I would debate you could definitely go a lot lower than that. It's just a matter of wrapping the concept around slightly younger people's heads of you want to try and get stuff together to try and get more points. So it's those concepts may be a bit more complicated, but the actual what you're doing is it is just drafting. It's just drafting and then placement if you want and then scoring. And then you do that a few times. And Bob's your uncle. We played a learning game of this at BorderCon, 4 of us, and I think an hour, between the 4 of us.
Yeah.
And then in subsequent games, I've taught it and pretty much the exact same time. And on the book here in front of me, it says 45 minutes. So I'd completely argue that that's absolutely right.
Does it remind you of other games that you've played?
It reminds me, well, the drafting, any other game that's got drafting.
Yep.
So you're simple. It's as simple as like your Sushi Go type of drafting. And then your simple worker placement. So you could almost argue that this is a small world light type thing. Because in that game, obviously, you put stuff where you want it. You don't draft it. But this could be good to lead you into a game like that. Because you just got the idea. This is kind of like a kid's area control, really.
Yep.
Same as like a My First Stone Age was like the introduction into worker placement.
Okay.
This could be an introduction into area control as well as drafting all in the one kind of game. But I don't want to say that it's just for kids because I've played it with grown-ups and I happen to be one of those grown-ups. And this was absolutely one of my games of Bordercon.
It's
because it's just so simple. It does exactly what it says on the tin, and sometimes that's what you want. You don't need anything more complicated than that.
You know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing some elements of King Domino, Queen Domino.
Definitely.
And I'm hearing, and it's not a game I've played for a long time, so my memory might be a little bit vague, but Kingdom Builder.
Yeah.
Where you've got, like, you're getting spaces together and you're scoring those, but then you're also going to other spaces. And with that, you've got the different types of terrain.
Yep.
But just with the lots of bunnies and the scoring, it sort of sounded a little bit like a bit of those games brought together.
Yeah. And since it's Yellow Games and since it's Richard Garfield, there's a good chance that there'll probably be expansions for this, which I'm absolutely hoping. It's a game that so easily could be expandable. You could add another section to the board and add some more cards for that. You could add some more of those parchment cards. There is one thing I wanted to bring up with one of those parchment cards, actually.
Yes.
Is that you would know, Mark, as an older video gamer man yourself.
Yes.
You've played through your Icewind Dales and stuff like that in the past.
Yes.
There's a thing that's happened in video games for so many years that you'll be in, say, a dungeon, you'll be a level 20 character, and then you'll raid a treasure chest that's taken you ages to get to, and it'll be in there a sword that's like a level 10 sword. It's like, well, that's the game knows I'm already stronger than that.
Yep.
Why is it giving it to me? And you rack your brain, and there is literally no logical reason.
Yes.
Video games have done this for years. And
it's like, I'm going to chuck that in my pack and sell it for a couple of bucks, but really, really, thanks very much.
Yeah. And video games, they still do it to this day, and it makes no sense. The reason I want to bring it up is because those parchment cards that I mentioned, which are a very important part of the game, anyone out there that plays this, I have won both games I've played in this because I've had the most of those cards, because I look at it and go, yep, I'm going to get some points off that. I'll get it. Because everyone just goes, I want to go bunny mad, which you do have to for those parchment cards. But there's one of them which drives me crazy because it is the equivalent of what I just said.
Yeah.
Is that it says at the end of the game, if you control 10 fifes, and as I said before, to have a fife, you need to have two bunnies, at least minimum two bunnies connected.
Yeah.
To have 10 at the end is insane. I've never seen anybody with more than like three or four.
Okay.
And that's only because they've got cards at the end of the round they've been given them, and they've gone, oh, I have to put bunnies on these because they're the last cards I've got. So you get the odd one or two that you don't even really need. They might score you a point or two or maybe none.
And you said about those sky towers.
You can use to connect
them. Use to connect like two single ones so at least they can be classed as a fife.
Yeah. So you can do that kind of stuff. But the thing is, there's this one parchment card that says at the end of the game, if you have 10 fifes, which you would literally have to go out of your way to get, you get like 12 victory points.
Is that many?
Nope. This game, both games I've played of it, you're scoring in the mid-100s by the end of it.
Okay.
12 points is It's literally nothing. So
you said that card you get that says if you're second,
get
15.
15, it might even be 10, but the point is, and all these other ones that are like, you know, two times the amount of fish things you have, which everyone's like, well, I've got four or five of them.
Yeah.
And the parchment ones are just, the treasure ones are like, here's 6 points for nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I just wanted to bring it up because it just annoyed me so much. That one card is like, why are you in here?
And it sounds like if you had that card at the start of the game, then at least you could set out and know. But if you're drawing it 2/3 of the way through the game.
But not even that. If you draw it like round one and go, this is my strategy, good luck coming dead last because you're going to have to spend your whole time trying to get that and it's not going to get you anything.
Yeah.
Either way, I've gone on too much about that one card. Little things bug me. You may have noticed, listeners, after these 200 episodes. and all my friends at work will definitely tell you that as well, if they're still listening, which I doubt it. So that is Bunny Kingdom by Richard Garfield, Yellow Games. If you have a chance to play it, I suggest you do. It will be a solid hour of enjoyment.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Mm. We'll come back and we'll hear all about what's been happening in the news here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio. And thanks again, special bonus mention to Area 52. I saw they did get a new arrival of the latest Funko Pop vinyls.
Of course they did. Why wouldn't they?
Okay, come back soon.
We'll drink until we feel the spirit.
Yes, we will. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, that was Regurgitator with Everyday Formula and then a few seconds of another song because we're still learning this new system here because it's funsies.
Sorry.
That is fine. And also remember, this week sponsored to you by our good friends at Area 52, as always. Go in there and get all the new board games. Go in there and get a copy of Bunny Kingdom. I saw a copy in there the other day. If I didn't already own it, I would have bought it there on the spot. Now, Mark, it is time for that news.
All right, it's the news. And as I've said, of course, We're coming out of the Origins convention. We're heading towards Gen Con. And then, of course, so Gen Con's August. October is Eschenspiel. That's what I was trying to think, because I know it clashes with PAX.
Yes, and Dice Tower Con, I think, is on right now.
I think it's on right now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot happening, and obviously a lot of it is around game releases. So
yes.
Stronghold Games, you may have heard of them. Their popular board game, one of your favourites, Leon,
yes.
Terraforming Mars, is expanding even further into space this October with the Colonies expansion. So this will be the fourth expansion.
Wow.
You're moving into the outer solar system where players establish space stations around the planets and moons in a quest for more resources. Now, most of the moons are not suited for terraforming, but establishing colonies will improve income and resources for your main goal, which is to terraform Mars.
Yeah, of course.
Yep. So the expansion includes new cards, new corporations. So during setup, you place 5 to 7 colonies from the 11 that are included. So it might be whatever the moons of Jupiter and Saturn and all those ones. Titan, yeah, that's one of them.
Yeah, sure.
All those ones. And then on a turn, in addition to some of your other actions, you can spend 17 mega credits to build on a colony and take its particular bonus. Now, only 3 players can do that, or you can spend 9 mega credits, or 3 energy, or 3 titanium, or 1 titanium, I'm not sure, to move your trade fleet to a colony and take the trade income posted there, with each owner of a colony on that tile receiving a colony bonus. And it also has 49 new project cards to be shuffled with those into the base game. So even more Terraforming Mars love.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's 4 expansions, and even at the BorderCon we just had, this was still on the tables every which way, so people absolutely are going mad for it. And all these expansions, I must admit, I've not heard heaps about them, but I think most that I have heard has been relatively positive, which is always nice.
Yeah, well, I think, Mars has been out, not Mars, the
Venus.
The Venus one's been out for a little while, and then there's the other, I can't remember what the name of it is. Yeah. So this one will be out towards the end of the year, and I'm actually hoping to play Terraforming Mars with a couple of the current expansions when I go to LFG this weekend.
Yes, you indeed enjoy that, Mark. Play them and you tell me about it so I don't have to.
Now, with only 4 months until Spiel 18 opens, German publisher Cosmos has dropped info on some of its new lineup for the second half of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very excited that one of the titles likely to gather the most attention is by our very good Australian designer friend, Phil Walker Harding.
Hello, Phil.
And it's Imhotep.
Yes.
Das Duel, or Imhotep
the Duel.
And so it's a two-player game. Now, don't get disappointed. There's no wooden blocks in the game, apparently.
Ooh.
It's a tile-laying game.
Okay.
But it's the theme of basically two competing builders.
Yep.
Laying tiles to build amazing Egyptian monuments.
Yep.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Not a lot of news out, but I'm sure we're going to get some more closer to the release date.
Well, Imhotep's an absolute belter of a game. There was a reason it was, nominated for the awards that it was. And, Phil doesn't really often steer us wrong, so I'd be looking forward to getting that there.
Well, funny you should mention that, Leon, because Imhotep, a new dynasty, is an expansion pack for Imhotep, of course, where there are new monuments to be built and players have new tools to support their work. Even the Egyptian gods are watching and will reward players for precise accuracy, but they will also punish those who fail to meet their exacting standards. And this pack includes new building sideboards, new market cards, and so much more. And this is coming out next month.
Really?
So if you're into Imhotep, I just picked up a second-hand copy. Well, you picked it up for me, thank you very much.
Oh, my wife picked it up for from Launceston all the way at the other end of the country.
Oh, that's fantastic. I can't wait to get it to the table, actually. Now, moving on. The seemingly indestructible Dr. Lucky.
Yes.
He's been thwarting would-be assassins since 1996, and now, just to create more fun, he's bought an island, adding a new dimension to the continuing quest to eliminate the fortuitous man. So the island of Dr. Lucky has players competing to kill the old man, but this time while dodging tropical hazards on the shores of Isla Fortuna, it will take strategy and luck to get him alone on the island and kill him with whatever you find lying around, a shark tooth, an elephant gun, some bad dates, or even your bare hands.
Wow, he just must be a horrible, horrible man. I mean, he looks pleasant enough on all the box lids, but apparently people have got a grudge against the man.
Well, this one, that one's also slated for an August release. And then we've got the designer of Covert and Fuse, Kane Klenko, has teamed. It sounds like he should be a superhero with a name like that.
Kane Klenko. Like no, surely that's a villain's name, if anything. Kane Klenko.
Oh, but like Bruce Banner and Wade Wilson.
Possibly. Well, the only Canes I know in popular culture are evil. They're a vampire or a professional wrestler that sets people on fire.
Oh, I'm thinking of, was it Bruce Kane who wrote Batman? Wasn't he the first Batman writer, Bruce Kane?
No, it was, oh, God.
I'm not getting confused with Bruce Wayne. No, someone Kane wrote
it is. Yeah, but you've just dropped that on me now. my nerd cred's gone completely out the window.
You think about
Bob Kane.
Bob Kane, there you go. Anyway. Not talking about Bob Kane, we're talking about Kane Klenko. He's teamed up with Gygamic Games to produce the real-time tile-laying game Chaosmos, which is going to be released in September. Now, it's based on Klenko's earlier design, Mad City, and Chaosmos challenges players to construct their own 9-tile galaxy in less than a minute.
Ooh.
So each round opens by revealing a new Law of Chaos, with a K, that can alter the rules of the game for that round. Players then acquire tiles so they can that they could got to arrange to maximise their score before the sand timer runs out. Quick players can score bonus points by betting that their galaxy is superior to others in some way. But players must also take care to balance their galaxy, as only the least valuable zone scores points in the end. Now, Chaosmos also features artwork by Sylvain Oblin. You may not know the name, but you do know the game Carnage!
I do indeed.
She's the artist from, or he, I'm not sure. They are the artist from Carnage.
Oh, such an underrated game, Carnage. Yeah. Such a good. I really got to get that the drinking version of that game to the table, and then under the table, and then upside down in a corner somewhere.
All right. Well, that one is going to be premiered at Gen Con, and then released just after Gen Con in September.
Cool, cool, cool.
Now, I heard about this one the other day. So, Hub Games have announced the cooperative mystery board game Holding On, The Troubled Life of Billy Kerr, which will be distributed through Asmodee in October. So in Holding On, players are the medical staff tasked with easing the last few days of terminally ill Billy Kerr following a massive heart attack. They must try and keep Billy around long enough to help him reveal the story of his troubled past so he can come to grips with it and get over his lifelong regrets. So the game includes 10 replayable scenarios during which the players provide needed medical care, respond to emergencies, and try to earn Billy's trust. And if they can guide their patient through his 3 regrets, they win the game.
Wow. Well, that either sounds thoughtful and interesting or the most depressing thing I've ever heard in my life. It's one or the other.
Well, I think Shut Up and Sit Down, I heard about this on their recent podcast. Okay. I think they must have had a demo copy.
Yep.
Maybe at the UK Games Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And they raved about it. Firstly, because I guess it's cooperative.
Yep.
It's a theme that I've never heard about a game about giving palliative care to a terminally ill man where you know he's going to die at the end.
Mm.
You just want to ease his suffering. But apparently the dilemma is, you know, do you give him some medical treatment, which might include drugs, which might make him pass out for a while, or do you keep him on the edge there so you can talk to him and get him to tell his story?
Yeah, very. I've got to love any game that's a different theme and pushing it. Speaking of Shut Up and Sit Down just quickly, they released a review the other day, as they do, of Century Spice Road and Eastern...
Century Eastern Wonders.
Eastern Wonders.
Yeah.
The reason I've been bringing it up is because I think it's probably the best review that they've done in a very long time. I mean, not that any of the other ones have been bad, but the opinions they give on that series and those two games itself, I think it's definitely one of their videos that's worth watching.
Well, you've jumped down my list a bit here, Leon.
Ooh, okie doke.
I was going to mention the fact that Century Eastern Wonders is now, I'm not sure if it's on limited distribution or just reviewers have got their hands on it, but it's definitely, if it's not out now, it's about to come out.
I want to say I've seen it for sale.
Yep. And so when you combine it to, so Century Eastern Wonders is a modular board where you're basically moving your different resources around.
Pick up and delivery kind
of thing. Yeah, exactly. But, and if you've seen the picture, you see put the two boxes together, they make a beautiful picture.
Yep.
You put the two games together and they make Century from Sand to Sea.
Yes.
Which is a board and tile game where you combine the mechanics of these two games. Now, one of the things obviously that Shut Up and Sit Down commented on was that game, the two combined, is a much, much heavier game than either of the two games together.
Yes.
Almost like you're playing two games at once and you've got to think twice as hard.
Yeah, and if that's a good thing or a bad thing, it would completely depend on personal preference.
Yeah, that's right. Although the other thing is, again, they mentioned you're double buying some of the components. Yes. So the fact that they come with those lovely little bowls.
Yep.
Well, of course, then you've got two sets of bowls that you don't need.
Yep.
And you've got two sets of cubes, which I don't think you use all the cubes in the combined game.
And also, what if you really, really like the combined game or one of those games more than the other one, but you want to kind of have them all, then you end up pretty much with an entire game that's like, I don't really need this. In the sense that, you know, if you don't really like just Century by itself, but you definitely want to keep it to make Eastern Promise, you know, a bit more bigger. So it's kind of like, it's a bit of a dilemma when it comes to that kind of stuff.
And then the other thing is, you've got to carry, if you want to play the combined game, you've got to carry the two boxes around because there's too much stuff to fit into one box.
Yeah, it's almost the equivalent of the Raiders of the North Sea.
Yes, that the trilogy.
Because the Raiders obviously is the gem right in the middle. The Raiders one that was nominated for Spiel, as it should have been.
Yes.
And
then you've got Shipwrights, I think, is the first one, or in terms of if you play them together.
That's the thing. You can play them together in that Rune Saga. But my point was being is that then the final one is Explorers of the North Sea, which apparently I have played that. That's a decent game. Raiders is obviously the best one, but the first one, Shipwrights, is fine, but it's really...
It's quite light.
Yeah. Well, it's light, but it still takes its... It's light, but it takes its damn time, is not ideal. So to kind of play that Rune Saga, you have to go through that, which is maybe a good thing, maybe a bad thing. But speaking of the Century thing, what is on everybody's mind, though, is will they release a Golem edition of the second game in the series, because the whole point of the first Golem edition was that it's the exact same game as Century Spice Road with just a different theme on it. Yeah. It was supposed to be exclusive to was it Gen Con or Origins last year or something, but people went, no, we want this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, we don't like the kind of the Spice Road kind of, you know, trading in the kind
trading
of
trading in the around the Mediterranean,
it's,
and
like,
cubes
it's
and
fine, and the game doesn't need a lot of theme to it, but that Golem edition, which is the edition I have, oh, it's pretty. And those actual crystal gems, my God, they are nice.
Well, so, I played that one with you, and I played the other one.
It would have been Bordercon last
year. The last Bordercon, with the cubes in it. Look, it is a really nice game, but I must admit, out of the two, I much prefer the Golem edition.
Yeah, and there's been no word. They haven't said. They had said at one point that they weren't going to do the rest of the series in that edition, but they also said they weren't going to have that out as retail, and people forced them into it because they wanted it, so they'd be kind of silly not to. But it'd be interesting to see if they do it or not.
The other thing is, of course, that it's meant to be a trilogy of games.
Yes.
So then does that mean, is the third one going to form? I'm presuming the answer is yes, that the third one's also going to be able to add it in to make one big game out of the three.
One big game out of the three, and could you combine, say, just 2 and 3 or just 1 and 3?
Oh, my goodness. The possibilities are endless.
Nobody knows.
Okay. Well, back to games or other games, new games. So Fantasy Flight Games, they've been known to put out a game or two and an expansion or two as well. And I personally am very excited about this, and good friend of the show, Aiden, will be when Fantasy Flight will release the new expansion, Horrific Journeys, for Mansion of Madness 2nd Edition in Q4. The evil is spreading across the New England countryside by land, sea, and air. Over the Atlantic, a dirigible journey. There's not enough good dirigible journeys these days.
No. An airship for you
and I. Yes, an airship's journey is disrupted by bad weather and murder.
Mm-hmm.
On the water below, a deranged saboteur plans to sink a luxury ocean liner. And farther inland, a sightseeing train is barreling down the rails, trying to outrun an unseen interdimensional threat. Oh. So Mansions of Madness Horrific Journey is a deluxe expansion with three scenarios that takes investigators outside of Arkham and will include new map tiles, monsters, puzzles, and events. Now, That sounds exciting to me.
Now, Mansions of Madness is one of the best games in the hobby. It's one of our favourites here on the show, that's for sure. But you can't take away from the fact that not heaps of replayability once you've played through scenarios, and it ain't cheap.
Yeah.
It really ain't. But it's one of those ones that it ain't cheap, but I think it's worth it for the experience and the game you get out of it. But it'd be a hard sell for some people, sadly.
You almost need to have parallel gaming groups, so where you can get your value, where you play it with a few different groups. And I guess you, as the person who owns the game, you're going to know, you're not always going to know all of how the scenario plays out, because, you know, there's obviously branches that happen along the way, but you are going to know generally what the story of that scenario is.
Yes.
But it is, look, it's lovely to look at, it's lovely to play at, it's... To me, it's just about the perfect example of the app and board game integration.
As long as one person kind of knows the rules, you can pretty much set the game up and go, right, we're going.
Yeah.
And then you can go from there and figure out the rest.
Cool. Now, speaking of Fantasy Flight Games, and I can't remember if we spoke about this briefly, but I'm going to speak about it again.
Okay.
They're releasing Cosmic Encounter 42nd Anniversary Edition.
Yes, they are.
In this quarter, actually, quarter three. Now, the new printing will become the standardized version for the game when it releases, and it'll include a revised rulebook, quick start guide that invokes the nostalgia for the original game. There'll be a new species, the Demon.
Yes.
That joins a lineup of aliens, and he was previously only available at Cosmic Con.
Yes.
New cosmic combo cards offer players new way to customize their games, but the new edition will remain compatible with all existing Cosmic Encounter expansions. Now, Leon, what do you think about this?
I've got all of it, of obviously the most recent edition until this one comes out, and I want that Demon because, you know, it's metal, as am I, but I don't know. I don't think there's enough in there that... Obviously, if you've never played Cosmic Encounter, don't listen to anything Mark's about to say. It is the one of the best games in all of gaming history. And if you haven't got a version, get this version. For the love of God, get this version. As well as a couple of the old expansions. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I'm sold on this. I think I'd like to see it played first. But, I don't know if I necessarily need it when I've got all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But we'll see how. I'm sure our good friend Richard. Hello, Richard. Hello, Sarah. I'm sure he will buy it, so I'll get a chance to have a crack at it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if we're going to talk about it. We did talk briefly about it on our other Bordercon episode where we played Cosmic Encounter and Richard and Sarah won it, and I had some fun.
What is it with you in this game? It just doesn't work.
No, it's a bit chaotic for me. Yes. Anyway, finally, Harbour Games Dragon Breath, or Funkelschatz, was named the winner of the 2018 Kinderspiel des Jahres, the children's game category, in the prestigious German Game Design Awards. Mm. It was designed by father-daughter team Lena und Gunther Burkhardt, and this fantasy children's game has players trying to collect the most colourful gems. Players are dragon children who have found a column of ice with sparkling gems frozen inside, and they convince Dragon Dad to melt the ice rings so the overflowing gems fall to the ground and can be gathered up. However, each player must pick a coloured token each round before the next ice ring is removed, and this is the only colour gems they may gather that round.
Mm-hmm.
So the game is for 2 to 4 players aged 5 and up, and plays in 15 minutes. Have you heard about that one at all?
I have indeed heard, and I have seen pictures of the components, and does it have very nice looking components. Yeah. Just all these like crystals and dragony stuff, and yeah, it definitely looks cool. It'd be one that I'd be happy to play. We just have to wait until we get that that English version down here, which hopefully shouldn't be too much longer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, you know, in the past we've never really looked that much at the Kinderspiel games.
No.
And often they are ones that... We don't always see English versions of all of them.
Well, all three of the nominees were all pure German, weren't they? From what I recall.
Yes, this time around. And because there is a huge market for children's games in Germany. It's such an established market.
Yep.
And often the best ones, or the ones that have some sort of cross-market appeal, do get released mostly, I guess, into the North American market.
Yep.
But usually it does take some time. I'm trying to remember with that one. We love the title of Geister, Geitzer, Schatzmeister, that was one of the really exciting ones. I think that one eventually got a English release.
But it's not really in our, you know, wheelhouse. We don't really have young kids. Although recently I have started buying board games for my niece, who's been a big fan of some of the games I've put in front of her recently, like Get Bit and Rhino Hero Super Battle. I've just picked up a few for her, kind of half because, you know, I want to put a smile on her lovely little face, and also half because I want to play the games too.
Well, look, that's about all the news I have there. There is going to be a lot coming, I'm sure, with new releases. I don't know who's going to Gen Con. We're certainly not going.
No, sadly
I'd
not.
I'd love to go.
No.
And, I've been seeing all the photos of a good friend of the show, Ella.
Yep.
And also Angelus coming back from Origins, Lucky Ducks.
Well, they might as well just go to Gen Con as well.
They should just stay in America for a whole, 6 or 8 weeks
Ella could just do that and just be our correspondent. I mean, you're nice, Ella, but you just stay, just live over there. We'd be happy to see you once a year when you come back for BorderCon. That's fine. You could just be our correspondent. That would be lovely.
Okay. Well, look, we'll come back shortly, talk about another game we've been playing. Thanks so much, Area 52, for your continual sponsorship. I don't know that you'll be able to pick up any of these new games. Well, you will eventually.
Yes.
Not right now, but later on down the track you will. We'll be back shortly.
Hello, everyone. Sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support The Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month, and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts, and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
That was Senior Tabby with Magic Man, a local Tassie act on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you by our good friend at Area 52. They like cats, and they also have board games.
I was going to say magic as well.
Yes. Oh, and they're about to do a new core set for that, so that's going to be mental for the next few.
I saw that, some pre-releases coming out.
I've seen some photos of late, and every time I see magic now, I'm just like, I should know, Leon, but that game is so good, but I should know.
Don't do it.
Stay away from it. Anyway, so speaking of what we've been playing, because that's what the whole point of this show is, we also played something else at BorderCon. You're going to tell us about it, Marky Boy.
I am. And now, we did mention it very briefly in our sort of post-BorderCon edition, because you and I both played it, but separately.
Yes.
And that is a little card game called Tulip Bubble. It's by a designer, Coyle. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I have no idea.
I'm guessing I think he might be a Taiwanese designer, actually, off the top of my head.
Sure.
And the game is Moa Ideas Game Design. It's for 3 to 5, and it plays in 60 minutes. Now, I might have mentioned it, but Tulip Bubble is the second game that I know that tries to create the craziness surrounding the Tulip Mania economic bubble of 1636 to 1637.
We are just grasping for straw at the themes these days, aren't
it's
we?
It was a chaotic 12 months, that's for sure.
God.
And in this short time, many people made and lost fortunes trading and speculating on the tulip market.
Right.
So what we have in this game, we have a market board, which shows the prices of the different tulip varieties. You've got three different colours of tulips, and you've got three different letters that somehow classify the tulips, and I think from memory,
different grading.
A's were more expensive than the B's, and then the C's were like the cheapest ones.
The quality of the flower.
Yeah, so you've got the market board. It shows the prices, and then you've got all the cards laid out. So you've got three rows of cards, and then you have a couple more rows ready to go. As I said, there's red, white, and yellow tulips that are classed into A, B, and C. And at the start of the game, you've got three price markers, so one for each colour.
Mm-hmm.
They're randomised and they're placed in the sort of the middle of a track. So the market track goes from 1 to 7, but then underneath that you'll have different prices. So the A's can go up a really big amount, the C's not so much.
Yes.
And so then you've also got a market event deck. So this is a card you draw in the event phase at the start of each round. Now, one card, so it's a fixed deck, one card is taken out so you don't know what it is, and then you have a bubble bust card, which signifies the game end, basically, and that is shuffled into the last three cards of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a randomness as to when the game is going to end. Then the first card of the event deck is flipped over, and often it'll be like red tulips go up or yellow tulips go down, or the most expensive tulip goes up or down, or the most expensive and the least expensive swap spots. It's a little bit chaotic.
Just like any stock market, it fluctuates at the drop of a hat at the whims of God knows who.
Yeah, and often what you'll find is one marker might, say, move down, but you can't have more than one marker on any one space of the board.
No.
So if it's going to go and land on where another marker already was, it'll hop over and go even further down. So it causes the chaos.
Yes, double good or double bad.
That's right. So now most of the cards affect a specific colour, but some cause the cheapest colours to rise or the most expensive to fall. And then if you see the bubble bust card, the game ends immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So then all tulips in the next shipment row move down into the new arrivals row, which is a row on the board. Then the start token passes around. So then you've got the selling phase. So this is the... No, the buying phase is the fun part. The selling phase, you're just working out whether the tulips you've bought already...
Yes.
Whether they've gone up enough to justify you selling them, whether they're on the way down and you really need to get out quick before they go really, really down. So you can sell to the markets.
Yes.
Or you can sell to the collectors.
Ew.
So the markets, you'll sell at the price that's on the market board where the little marker is moving up and down.
Sure.
The collectors, there'll be, I think, three cards that are set out. And each collector will have a sort of a different thing they want to do. So one might say, I want an A, B, and a C.
Yep.
One might want all A's, but they have to be...
All red.
..a different variety or whatever.
Yep, yep.
And so there's a whole bunch of different collector cards. And if you sell to the collector, you get the market rate plus the bonus that the collector is paying.
Righto. Well, see, that, Mark, as a theme and as a game mechanics, that all sounds like utter bollocks to me. However, you're now going to tell us about the buying phase, aren't
that's
you?
That's right.
Which is where this game... becomes an actual game worth playing.
That's exactly right. So, in the buying phase, first of all, you check to see, can anyone buy the black tulip?
Which I think,
from memory, 120 guilders is the black tulip. So if you can buy the black tulip, you win the game automatically, the game stops.
Yes, the non-existent black tulip.
Well, Leon, did I mention that in my game... I bought the black tulip.
I did hear this.
But let me get to that later.
Mm.
And I might mention it a few times. So if you can buy the black tulip, you buy it now and the game ends immediately. But then each player has three bidding markers. Although I think if you play with maybe five players, you don't have three. I'm not sure. There's a little bit of variability there.
I play with five and I want to say we only had two.
Yeah, I think that might be right. So then
no, I can't remember.
From the start player, you go round... in turn order, and you place a bid marker on which tulip you would like to bid on. Everyone goes round, they place out their first marker.
Yep.
Then you go round and you place your second marker on a different tulip. Then we get into the fun, which is the bidding.
Yes, there's the 90% of the actual what you're doing in this game.
That's right. So you resolve the bidding. There's normally starts at the market level and you go up. And, of course, it can go crazy. If there's only one marker on a card, you can buy it for the market price.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, what you're wanting is you want to buy those tulips low.
Yes.
You want to watch them go up and sell them high.
But it is an absolute risk because, as we said, the fluctuation of that market, you just do not know. And I saw some cases where some people were bidding on stuff that was... They were spending a lot more money than stuff that was worth at the time, but they were just speculating all that later on, as well as the certain sellers might want certain things, even if they're not worth much, but you need to collect those things.
And, well, that's part of how this works, because not only does that the vent card change the market each round, but then in the cleanup phase, which happens at the end of the bidding, you then change the tulip prices based on the current state of the market, because... I didn't mention, when you sell your tulips, those cards go down onto the board so that at the end in the cleanup phase, you count What colour has the most tulips? Well, of course, because they are all of a sudden very common, they are worth the least.
Exactly.
So that colour will move down.
Mm-hmm.
And the colour that has the least amount of tulips out there in the market, that will move up because they are more valuable. So you can even start to sort of manipulate the market a bit where you can see that, oh, no, there's not many red tulips out there. I might sell some reds to drive it down.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the market starts to play silly buggers. Then you remove the tulip cards from the bottom rows, which is where you sold. They go away, and then you go back and do the same thing. So then the game obviously ends when either someone buys the black tulip or when you get to that bubble bust event. And if the bubble bust, then any tulips you got in front of you are worth nothing.
Mm.
You can go plant them in your garden.
Yeah.
Because basically you're not going to get any money for them.
Yes, no one cares anymore.
Now, the other interesting point that I didn't mention is, you know, people go crazy buying tulips, but there's not a lot of money around in this game.
No.
So how do you get more money?
The old bank.
That's right. You go to old Bankeroonie and say, hey, you forget about home loans, car loans, all these things.
Need some tulip loans.
I need a tulip loan.
Don't we all?
And the bank will finance your tulip. Now, you can't part finance a tulip.
No.
If you can't afford to buy it, you have to finance the whole tulip.
Yep.
Hopefully, then you can pay it off. Because during the game, you can't sell a financed tulip to a collector.
No.
They don't want no bad debt tulips.
No.
So you can only sell to the market when it's financed. So you need to try and pay it off. So that's another little wrinkle. So you pay off any debts you've got at the end of the game. And the person who has the most money after you pay your debts back is the winner. Or if you like me,
yes, you buy that
and you take a punt and you think everyone else was getting out of the market because it was getting down to, I think it was the third last round. So we knew, okay, the bubble bust could come right now.
Yep.
Everyone else got out of the market and got their money. I dived in.
Yes.
Bought all the tulips.
Yep.
Hoping that the bubble bust was going to be the last card. It was a 50-50 shot.
Yep.
Next round, oh, look at that. Bubble didn't bust. I got to sell all my tulips. And the prices went up. And I ended up with 120. Bought the black tulip. Ha ha, I win.
Yes. Now, well done, Mark. Well done. Now, this is a brilliant example of how all of board gaming works for me, in that this game itself, the theme for me, obviously couldn't care less, and the look's kind of bland and whatever else. But the people I played this game with, we had an absolute ball because it's the people and the experiences that are about these games. Because it kind of reminded me almost of Liar's Dice with the bidding and the saying stuff out. This is a game that I could see playing, probably not with my group of friends, because if I explained this to them, they'd go, no, I don't care what you say. No, that's not happening. But I could literally see someone, you could sit around with a couple of beers playing a type of bidding type game like this and having an absolute ball. But from the elevator pitch of this game, when you see it, you're like, because when I was first told at the border con, I said, we need a fifth player, Leon, and I was doing nothing. I went, okay, and it was with some good friends, Sir Sui and Leah and stuff like that, and I was like, okay, I'll jump in. I was like, tulip bubble? What on earth have you got me into?
Yeah.
But as I said, you get the right people with the right mechanics of a game, and you can just have a ball.
Yeah, and look, I played with the same group with Joe and Cameron and Misha.
Yep.
And I had an absolute ball with this.
Cameron walked off at one point because someone bought the tulip he wanted.
The fun, which is great. You know, the fun that I had was way more than I think was in the game. But hey, look, if you're interested in that sort of thing, give it a try.
Yes.
We've run out of time.
We have indeed,
we've
as always.
We've done so well to get right to the end of the show. And we'll come back next week.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.